Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour on developing the next generation of government leaders with Trevor Brown, Executive Director of the State of Ohio Leadership Institute and Dean of the John Glenn College of Public Affairs at The Ohio State University. But now you're the Dean of the Glenn College of Public Affairs at The Ohio State University and now the Executive Director of the State of Ohio's Leadership Institute. Given that background, given your academic interests, the fact that most of, you know, unlike most, your academic interest is really practical. I mean, it's right in there. What are some of the key leadership skills and competencies needed, given your background, needed by folks to succeed in public, in the public sector? And how do these skills differ, say, from those found in the private sector?
So one school of thought is there is no difference, right? I mean, that some of the skills that we need in the public sector are the same that we need in the private. But I think there are some important contextual differences that enhance certain kinds of skills that are needed in the public sector. It's always the case that in any leadership role, you're balancing multiple interests. Those interests are, there's a multiplicity of those interests in the public sector, particularly in a political environment. So those people who are moving into elected leadership roles have to get really flexible and agile at weighing different views and values, whether it's maybe we're in a moment where people are concerned about cost efficiencies, but others were concerned about equity. And usually it's both. And what are the trade-offs between those? Interestingly, in light of what we were talking about earlier, I think we're in an era where people see those as oppositional. Mm-hmm. And we know from years in the public sector that the trick of being an effective leader is finding that middle ground, not just between positions, but between values. What are the trade-offs between efficiency and equity? Those are magnified in the public sector. And we need leaders who are comfortable making those, first off, identifying those value trade-offs, and then figuring out how to balance them. Senator Glenn had many parts of his career. He was a military war hero. He was, you know, first in space as an American to orbit the Earth. But he was also an elected official. And he took great pride in that role as an elected official. And one of the things that he often reflected on at the tail end of his life, sadly, when he just passed away a year and a half ago, was that he was a Democrat at heart. Mm-hmm. But he was an Ohioan at heart, and having to navigate the what are the interests of the Democratic Party versus what are the interests of the state of Ohio, that's not something that comes easily to everyone, right? And I think in a corporate environment, we narrow. We think, who are my shareholders? Who are my clients? Who are my customers? And I'm going to focus like a laser beam on those people. Effective public leaders have to think more broadly about who their clients, constituents, stakeholders are.
You know, as you build up the curriculum and get the programs together, you know, thinking about the qualities, the leadership qualities that seem to resonate best in the public sector setting, that those identifying those trade-offs between equity and efficiency. You know, are there things that public sector leaders, whether elected or otherwise, whether it's the legislative branch or the executive branch, are there things they can learn from private sector in terms of leadership?
Yes, a couple. Well, the first is we were talking about sort of using objective information to make decisions. By and large, I think those in the private sector, that is an assumed starting point for leadership. Right? If I'm going to make a decision and I'm thinking about how it's going to impact my bottom line or whatever it may be, I need to start from a basis of fact. I need to understand my product and what it is I sell and what's the likelihood that people are going to buy it. I think sometimes public officials forget about those fact-based requirements of their decision making. And so we often hear public officials say, well, we just need to make this organization run more like a business. If that is our goal, let's start with that founding principle. We will use information as the basis for decision making, a basic tenet of any private entity. It should be a basic tenet of any public entity as well. And sadly, I think at least in the elected sphere, we've gotten away from that. A second is that there's and this is true again, I think of both, but it's amplified in the private sector, is clarity of messaging. Being very clear and effective in getting information across in an interpersonal session, maybe it's to setting to motivate people so they understand what the goals and objectives are. In a larger setting, it's communicating your message to those who might vote for you. And more than just signaling in a few sound bites, it's that ability to convey complex information so that people can understand it, so that they join you in that decision. They support you not simply because of a slogan, but they support you because they understand and they trust you to make the decision, whatever it may be that you're faced with, because you've explained to them, these are the trade-offs, this is why we're going the direction we're going. And while this may hurt you over the short run, it's going to benefit all of us over the long run. That is an essential skill that I think many private leaders are good at saying, here's how we have to invest in this area or do the following activity, because it will pay dividends for us down the road.
You know, what does the Institute hold as core public values, mm-hmm. and how are you working to cultivate and develop these values?
So the first one is, as a public institution, and this is a statement about the Glenn College and the Ohio State University, is, and we are very aware of this given that we live in a very purple state. At any one moment, it might be red or blue, but if you look over the history of Ohio, it swings. We're nonpartisan. So while we may have the name of Senator Glenn on our mantle, we're very committed to that nonpartisan, objective presentation of information and skills and knowledge. And so a tenet of the center's operation, or the Institute's rather, will be that nonpartisan approach. We will welcome all parties to participate, Republican, Democrat, Independent, and all should feel comfortable being in that setting. A second value-based tenet is the provision of information from an objective third party, a neutral source in the form of the university, to decision makers, right? Is that we will be committed to making sure the information that we provide to legislators or other elected officials has gone through a scrutiny that suggests that it's balanced, it's fair, it's not skewed towards one political perspective or the other. And then the third is that we are committed to a value-based approach to leadership. That in the public sector, we start from those values. The people that come to public service, they often have them already. That's what drove them. But to remind them, as they get more embedded into the incentives of running for office or whatever, it's to remind, why did you go down this road? Why did you come here? What was that spark in your stomach that made you want to serve? Tell me that story about what drove you to elected office in the first place. And always use that as a touchstone to remind yourself of why you're sitting in the chair that you're in.
You know, you mentioned earlier that part of the genesis for starting the Institute was the reality of term limits and the effects, whether unintended or intended, of term limits to sort of take away a little bit of the institutional knowledge. And I was wondering, is it, you know, to some, I want to play a little devil's advocate, but you mentioned something earlier which I thought was interesting. For some, isn't it worthwhile to have term limits? So this way you are able to, it's sort of a reasonable trade-off, a short-term loss of institutional knowledge. So you mitigate the consequences of an entrenched special interest. But you did point out, and I want to answer the question for you, the elected officials may leave, but that special interest, those lobbyists are still around.
Yeah, and thank you for coming back to this. And you just said two words that are important, special interest and lobbyists. Those are two different things. And it's important to draw that distinction. I think you're absolutely right that one of the virtuous intentions of term limits, and I think there's evidence to suggest this part may be working, is to shake up those iron triangles that we used to talk about in political science between, you know, elected officials, the special interests, regulators, whatever it might be, to break those ossified connections. And I think it does that. But what it does is it's not so much that it advantages special interests, it advantages lobbyists. Yeah. And lobbyists aren't bad people. We see them as public servants too. They were drawn to represent a multiplicity of interests. The challenge is they're not elected officials, right? They're there as private interests to collect a paycheck. And again, that's not a bad thing, but their incentives are to represent certain interests, those who are, we hope, people of integrity, but are pursuing their special interests. And lobbyists They come to know more about the interests of those organizations they're to represent, the processes of governance. They understand how to navigate that process, and they know the political dynamics of the districts that these people come from. And I'm glad that there are good people in those roles, but again, those people are not accountable to the voter. They are accountable to those who've asked them to serve on their behalf, and they have personal accountability to the elected officials that they deal with. So that's not the way we designed the American system of governance. We didn't say that we would put the power of decision-making in those that are paid to represent those interests. We said we would put that in the hands of the people's representatives. So I agree. It shakes things up a little bit. But in shaking things up, when the sands fell back down, it put it in the hands of lobbyists. And we just want to shake the sands up again and put it more in the hands of those elected representatives.
So how, you mentioned the track, you mentioned the things that the Institute's doing, but I'm wondering, how are you capturing the potential loss of that institutional knowledge? What are your visions for doing that?
Well, and actually we model it after a lot of the things the center, your center does so well. We see you as a repository of some of the best lessons in leadership. I was, as mentioned earlier, proud to be a contributor. And universities, again, are a similar kind of repository of knowledge. At the same time, we're creating new knowledge. Our faculty and other leading thinkers are stimulated and generating new knowledge. But then it's writing it down, it's codifying it in a certain particular way and making it accessible to people. So we can envision creating similar kinds of outputs to what you do. Conversations like this, recorded and captured and shared. I think sometimes the easiest thing for people to access in decision-making roles is just conversations between people, but conversations that are rooted in expertise. And then we will capture that expertise, and somebody who's driven to learn more can go and read the technical report, read the issue brief, or the deep research that comes behind it. So we will have a catalog of that kind of information as a part of this. And we want to put Ohio's best thinkers and experts in front of these decision makers, because we know that so much of the decision making in politics is based off of interpersonal relations. And so we want to connect our faculty, the faculty of our peer institutions across the state of Ohio. That's the Bliss Institute at the University of Akron, the Voinovich School at Ohio University, the Levine College of Urban Affairs at Cleveland State, and other universities. Get those experts back connected to elected officials so they see them as a trusted source as they're weighing information, weighing the decisions that are going to require some information.
So I was remiss in not asking you initially, what would you envision, or what do you have as your key strategic priorities for, say, the next year?
Yeah. Well, we're still in our startup phase. And so, number one, you got to build the right team, as we know from many of the lessons that you guys share in the IBM Center. So we're hiring staff and putting together teams of experts to build content and think about how to deliver this knowledge. So that's step one. Step two is to beta test some of the content and the ways that we deliver. So I mentioned earlier the first Leadership Academy cohort will go through this summer, and they will be a test case for us, mm-hmm. and we'll learn some lessons from them. And one of the things I think we do well in universities, even though we sometimes get criticized for being reactionary and ossified, we're committed to learning, and we want to make improvements. So we'll run a cohort this summer. We'll learn from that. And then make improvements and roll out better versions. So that's step two, is to start that process of putting some content out there, listening to those who would use it or participate in it, and then making improvements to it. Those are our two big goals this year.
So do you envision, we mentioned the center a couple of times, do you envision producing original scholarship, thought leadership in this area?
Yeah. And I know perhaps a later question, and I'll segue into that too, is are there others that have done this?
Yeah.
And there are. And so, yes, we will create some original content, but also part of what we're going to try and do is link to the expertise that others have already created. And so we see one of our roles as a trusted portal mm-hmm. into the extant knowledge that's already out there. So, for example, if somebody's interested in executive leadership in state government and wants to learn lessons let's direct them to your research. And so we would link right to that. Then there are other institutes like the one we're trying to build that have been around for a while. There's a longstanding program in Michigan. The Carl Vinson Institute of Government at the University of Georgia has been doing this for decades and just an exemplar in that area. Our job is not to reinvent something that's already been done really well. Well, let's direct you to there. But there are issues in Ohio that are specific to Ohio. And so then in terms of new content, it's figuring out what can we do to add value? What, you know, we have an expert in K through 12 education in the state of Ohio. Well, we'll put out a policy brief on that and get it in front of decision makers. But again, general lessons and executive leadership, we're coming to you.
What are the strategic priorities for the State of Ohio Leadership Institute? We'll explore this question and so much more when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.